Are you going down?
Yes. Thanks, I was just seeing Joseph. So much better.
Mr. Toffler's not on that floor.
Right. Yes, well, I got lost and, you know, went a bit wrong. Actually, I didn't get lost. I was snooping. Hospitals fascinate me.
Are you being serious?
Yes. When I visit hospitals, I get excited. I feel like I can make a contribution.
Well, perhaps I can show you around.
I would adore that.
Hey everybody, it's Bina 007 back for another 10-minute movie review. Except this week it's not spoiler-free because we're discussing Princess Diana, the most famous woman in the world of her time. And well, it's not really a biopic. The movie Diana, which focuses on the last 2 years of Diana's life and her alleged affair with a Pakistani heart surgeon based in London called Hasnat Khan. It's a movie that's basically a soupy melodramatic love story. It has very little to do with attacking the royal family or the media that some would say hounded Diana to her death. It doesn't attack or deal in any of the conspiracy theories surrounding Diana's death. And it certainly, while very lightly and gently tackling Diana's own rather quixotic relationship with the media, it doesn't really delve into that contradiction, the way in which she was both victim of them, but also a very skilled manipulator of the press. So this is a movie really without any balls, and I do rather wonder whether there was at some point a more reflective, critical, politicised version of the screenplay that got watered down because the producers were just worried about the controversy that still surrounds Princess Diana nearly 20 years after her death. But anyway, back to the movie as we are served it. As the movie opens, we see Princess Diana, who has been separated from Prince Charles for some time, as a very lonely, vulnerable woman. She's not really given access to her children that frequently by the palace, although the movie doesn't mention the fact that they're at boarding school, right? So it's not like she's going to see them every day anyway. She goes to... Her life's kind of in a limbo. She hasn't yet divorced. She doesn't want to divorce because of the scarring impact of her own parents' divorce when she was a little girl. But she finds herself in hospital, sort of in a meet-cute, meeting this doctor in a lift, and basically flirts with him, gives him her phone number, and offers to cook him dinner at some point. And it's very clear as the movie unravels in its first act, which is their initial courtship, that she's very much doing the chasing. It's she who tries to immerse herself in his interests, learning about jazz and, you know, putting up with or being charmed by his rather proletarian love for junk food and football. It's also very clear in this first act that Hasnat Khan, because he's very focused on his medical career, and also because of the deep cultural divide between them, he has a very traditional Pakistani family back at home who are not going to approve of a sort of Christian divorcee new wife. Besides, at this point, Diana isn't even divorced. So the romance continues, it has its breakups and makeups, and that really takes us through the first hour and a half of this film. The fact that at the very outset, the doctor was very clear with Diana that he didn't really see a way that this would work, and yet because she loved him and he apparently loved her, they kept on trying to keep it going. As the movie goes into its final act, however, the tone shifts, and we see Diana flirting with and going on holiday with Dodi Fayed. And I guess we all know how that ends in Paris, with them taking that fateful car journey, ending in that horrific crash. What the film makes clear, and what I suppose is going to absolutely infuriate Mohammed Al-Fayed, who has created this enormous shrine to their romance and love in Harrods, and I suppose his theory is that the British sort of elite spy service bumped off Dodi and Diana because they thought it was far too embarrassing for her to be engaged to his son. What this film posits is that Diana was basically using Dodi to make Hasnat Khan jealous, that she was very complicit in those famous iconic photographs of the two of them together, and that the ploy nearly maybe worked. As movies go, it's not that this movie is terribly badly made. It's directed by Oliver Hirschbiegel, and it's a bizarre choice because this is the guy who made the very celebrated and critically acclaimed Hitler's Bunker film Downfall, Der Untergang, which won many, many awards, including an Oscar, if I remember. And in that film, he showed such artistry and deft handling of what is incredibly difficult material. But none of that really seems to have been brought to bear on this film, Diana. And in fact, it's rather pedestrian. It's a rather pedestrian love story. As for Naomi Watts, who plays Diana, I mean, an incredibly challenging role. And she gets some of the mannerisms right, but it almost becomes pastiche. Because Diana's so very well known that when someone tries to imitate her by that sort of shy look from underneath the eyelashes or the tilt of the head, it almost looks like a cheesy impression. And poor Naomi Watts is saddled with a succession of really very unfortunate wigs, which doesn't help her in any way, shape or form. Naveen Andrews, fine. I mean, he's not really given much to do as Hasnat Khan except sort of look austere and disapproving. And, you know, the rest of the cast, rather anonymous, really. I suppose the flaw with the movie is really the script by a chap called Stephen Jeffries, who I note from IMDb also wrote the script for The Libertine. It's a Johnny Depp British costume drama, which is famous in my mind because on my blog it's the shortest review I've ever written because it was just so poor. I had nothing to say about it. I just wonder what this film would have been like if the director and screenwriter had had the courage to try and be insightful about the many conflicts and contradictions in Diana's late life, her relationship with the press, her status as both victim and manipulator. If they had had the courage maybe to be more critical of the press, of the palace, of Diana's own staff, and indeed of Hasnat Khan, who effectively does leave her high and dry. But it's a movie that's trying to be so careful and plays it so safe. It just comes across as very glossy, vapid, shiny Hello Magazine story, which maybe is all that its target audience needs. But if so, what a waste of a good director and what a waste of a good star in Naomi Watts. I also was kind of thinking, as I was rather bored during this movie, of what it might have been like if Sofia Coppola had tackled it in the same impressionistic manner that she brought to Marie Antoinette, a similar story of a royal princess, then a queen, married into a family that doesn't understand her, an establishment against which she is rebelling, but which gave a much more insightful view as to her psychological mindscape, which unfortunately Diana just never really does. So, unfortunately, a really rather shockingly poor movie. It's not terrible, but it's just really banal and just adds nothing to our understanding of this very famous and, had time, rather powerful woman. But if you've seen Diana and agree or disagree with my take, then please feel free to leave a comment on the blog at beena007.com. And in the meantime, thank you for listening. Diana has a running time of 113 minutes and is rated 12A in the UK for strong language, brief landmine injury and surgical detail. The movie is currently on release in the UK, Ireland, Hungary, Iceland and Poland. It rolls out globally over a couple of months. You can get the full release schedule at the written review at beena007.com. But the crucial date is it opens in the USA on November the 1st.